Hello, my name is Mike Whalen, and I'm here to talk to you today about requirements and architectures for secure vehicles. This is an article that I co-wrote with colleagues Darren Kofer and Andrew Gasek from Rockwell Collins. I am based at the University of Minnesota. Do you trust the software in your vehicle? Recent exploits have let hackers remotely control aspects, such as brakes and steering, perform surveillance and eavesdropping, and even remotely steal a car. It's speculated that Iran landed a U.S. stealth drone at an Iranian airfield through a GPS spoofing attack. Recent research in self-driving cars and multi-vehicle coordination requires ever more software that could be used to launch cyber attacks. In DARPA's High Assurance Cyber Military Systems, HACMS project, research teams are investigating how to construct complex networked vehicle software securely. An air team builds software for an unmanned aerial vehicle, UAV, and a ground team investigates software for automobiles and ground-based robots. These teams are paired with a red team of professional penetration testers to assess the software's security vulnerabilities. The red team can access all software, design documentation, models, meeting documentation, analysis results, and other system binaries produced by the other teams. To build our air team software securely enough to repel red team attacks, we needed an approach that was rigorous, flexible, and compositional to let us focus on important security concerns at several abstraction levels. As in commercial and military development, our UAVs must incorporate a significant amount of third-party software. We also expect that our UAVs could be networked to construct systems of systems whose purpose might differ considerably from the UAV's system's original intent. So we must be able to reason about requirements at various abstraction levels. Indeed, whether you consider a statement to be a requirement or design decision depends on the abstraction level at which you focus. If you look at the article, we have an example of such multiple levels of abstraction in Figure 1. But the idea here is simply that we can compose a system architecture that has several subcomponents into a new system, at which point we may view the system itself as a component. On the other hand, we may look what looks like a top-level system within a particular architecture and decompose it and find that it has internal structure as well. So whether or not a statement is a requirement depends a little bit at the level of abstraction at which you work. So I may have a flight guidance system that says, if I'm in the lateral approach mode, I should be in the vertical approach mode, so that basically the plane is being flown towards the airfield. But when I look at a larger scope and consider the entire flight deck, I may have a requirement that says the automation shall help the plane safely land. And that will involve the requirements I've defined in the flight guidance system. So anyhow, the figure in Figure 1 just gives you an abstract example of this kind of decomposition. So in order to talk about requirements and their limits for security systems, we made two main assumptions about the system and potential attackers. These assumptions are essentially limits on what we can prove about the system's security. The first assumption relates to the UAV's intended functionality and its controllability from the associated ground station. We assume that an authorized user has the authority to issue any command to the UAV, including commands that would crash or otherwise destroy it. We don't wish to limit, a priori, what a little legitimate user may choose to do with the UAV, so we assume that all commands sent by the authorized user are legitimate. We'll only need to model whether a message, and the command it carries, is well-formed. If an attacker can co-opt an authorized user's identity, no mitigation is possible. The second assumption relates to using wireless communication. Because we can't realistically limit access to the radio spectrum, attackers will always be able to launch a denial-of-service attack, either by jamming the physical link or overwhelming the UAV receiver with well-formed messages, even if they fail authorization. This means we cannot provide an absolute guarantee about reception and execution of commands from authorized users. However, we can require the UAV to reject any commands lacking authorization. We can also require the UAV to execute commands from authorized users in a timely fashion, assuming there's no DOS attack, denial of service attack, on the radio link. And when a denial of service attack is detected, our requirements can specify what actions the UAV should take to keep itself safe or avoid compromising its mission, if possible. To construct the requirements, we followed an approach similar to that was described in last issue's column, which employed security cards. We knew quite a bit about our immediate adversary, the Red Team. They have strong technical skills and essentially unlimited knowledge about the system. So we focused on a variety of known concrete attacks drawn from the Common Attack Pattern Enumeration and Classification List, which is found at http://capec.mitre.org, so capec.mitre.org. First, we ensured generic security principles such as user identification and authorization, secure network access and communication, secure storage, content security, and availability. From these principles, we created system-level security requirements for the UAV, including these. The UAV executes only unmodified commands from the ground station. And secondly, if an air-ground communication link fails or is eliminated through a denial-of-service attack, the UAV executes its no communication behavior. So these are two of many requirements that we had in the system. And from the system requirements, additional requirements were levied on the data link, operating system, maintenance procedures, and fault handling, as well as many other system aspects. A second focus of our work is on eliminating weaknesses. Even with good requirements, preventing attacks is difficult. New attack methods are regularly discovered. So we also focused on common software weaknesses that lead to security problems. The Common Weakness Enumeration website, http://cwe.mitre.org or cwe.mitre.org, maintains a large list of such weaknesses. Therefore, we approach the problem bottom-up, eliminating common weaknesses known to be important to many attacks, such as those related to authentication and authorization, system partitioning, maintenance, OS boot and configuration, overflow or underflow, encryption, and memory safety. Some of these weaknesses depend considerably on the system architecture. We modeled the system architecture in AADL, or the Architecture Analysis and Design Language, and used this model to reason about system vulnerabilities. We then constructed tools to build system images directly from the model. To ensure strict enforcement of the architectural partitioning, we used the SEL4 microkernel from Data61, which has a rigorous proof of correctness. Other weaknesses can be eliminated by the programming language. For example, Ivory, developed by Galois Incorporated, is an efficient domain-specific programming language that guarantees the absence of certain classes of memory errors. It also provides significant integration with model checking tools, as well as underflow or overflow, and cryptographic libraries. Using these weaknesses to reason bottom-up and the requirements to reason top-down, we're able to reason about security and composition. Assuming that we can define what it means for a component to be secure, and define the property secure of A, where A is some component in the system, it might be tempting to say that when we assemble components to form a larger system, we get if A is secure and B is secure, then the composition of A and B is also secure, for some as yet undefined composition operator. Such a result certainly isn't true in general, although it might hold for some specific properties and types of composition. For example, if we're concerned with the system's memory safety, it might be sufficient to demonstrate that the memory safety of all that system's processes. So if we had processes A, B, and C, and we knew that each one of the processes was memory safe, then we could prove that the system composed of A, B, and C was memory safe. What's more often the case in architecture-based composition is that we must look at different properties at the component level rather than the system level. In this way, composition is more like a set of lemmas that are used as an argument to complete a theorem's proof. Each lemma might correspond to a particular component property, a channel of connecting components, or an attacker. That is, for example, we might have a lemma about A, and another lemma, lemma 2, about the channel, and a lemma 3 about B, and another lemma about attacks. And given all those things are true, we can say that A and B, the composition of A and B, is secure. Now, this rule that we're using to reason about the compositional security of the system is essentially a formalization of some argument pattern that you would have in something like an assurance case. So using such reasoning, we developed an assurance case for our system's primary high-level property. The UAV executes only unmodified commands from the ground station. In the article, we have a figure that shows a portion of the insurance case. What we essentially have is a top-down tree of claims and arguments. So if we look at the tree, at the top of the tree in this case, we have the property that we actually care about. The UAV executes only unmodified commands from the ground station. And then we decompose this argument into two parts. First, we say the UAV motors only execute commands that pass decrypt. And the second part is only the ground station can send commands that pass decrypt. So we can decompose the decryption part into a sequence of claims that describe the encryption algorithm, the strength, the correct implementation of the encryption software, and the key management for encryption. And if we look at the second, the first claim, where we talked about the UAV motors, we are looking at the architecture. So what we want to do is we want to show that any commands that reach the UAV motors must have gone through the decryptor, and they can't come along a path that bypasses the decryptor. So we have an argument that can be further decomposed and is actually decomposed to some depth that describes the different ways that signals get to the actuators from the different sources of commands. Either they come from sensors or they come from the radio, and we have two different radios, so there's a bunch of different ways that commands can reach the actuators. And the benefits of this approach is that this assurance case that we have is actually generated directly from the software architecture. So if we've diagrammed all the communication paths that exist within the architecture, and we know, in fact, that we have because we generate the system image directly from the architectural model, then basically we can computationally check to see whether or not there are any paths that bypass the decryptor by just looking at the architectural description. So what we get is we get an approach that allows us to build assurance cases that are closely and tightly tied to the architecture description in such a way that we can actually compute portions of the assurance case using the architectural description. Okay, so we broke the claims down into things about reachability within the architecture and the strength of encryption. And then we expressed our assurance case general structure using the resolute language. So this is actually the language that reasons across the architecture. It lets you embed assurance case claims and rules in a system architectural model. Then the resolute engine evaluates these rules over our architecture to generate a concrete assurance case. This allows our assurance case to adapt automatically as the model was updated and changed. Some changes could break the assurance case. For example, adding a non-memory safe component to a non-partitioning real-time OS. Resolute would flag such issues. We could then fix this, for example, by hosting the component in SEL4, which has memory partitioning, or ensuring that the component was memory safe by compiling from Ivory. For either fix, Resolute would automatically construct the corresponding assurance case. In addition, several portions of the architecture were assured through proof. The proof of the partitioning and correct OS behavior in SEL4, provided an ironclad foundation for building our UAV. Proofs of the Ivory type system ensured that all Ivory programs that were compiled were memory safe, which removed a large class of attacks. The HACMS project comprises three 18-month phases. Near each phase's end, the red team receives a demonstration vehicle and software for penetration testing. In phases 1 and 2, the air team's UAVs successfully resisted all red team attacks. In phase 1, attacks were only possible through the communication link between the ground station and UAV. In phase 2, we provided root access to a Linux partition that controlled a camera used for vehicle tracking and demonstrated that attacks launched from this partition didn't affect the UAV's flightworthiness. In phase 3, we're adding capabilities to our UAVs, such as secure geofencing, to ensure they avoid certain no-fly zones. We're also pursuing technology transfer with our tools and techniques with automotive and aerospace companies. Our experience shows that careful attention to requirements and system architecture, along with formally verified approaches that remove known security weaknesses, using ivory and Cell4, can lead to vehicles that can withstand attacks from even sophisticated attackers with access to vehicle design data.